Media shouldn't be one note. Support Rabble.ca and a diversity of voices in Canadian media. Visit rabble.ca/donate to contribute.
The Green Majority here on CIUT 89.5 FM. I have my bedtime story voice today. Stefan is also in the studio. What kind of voice do you have today, Stefan?
I would say the, a slightly chipper. More chipper than I felt a couple hours ago. The coffee and a half I had on the way here was helpful.
Is this your Troy McClure voice today?
No, my Troy McClure voice is much, much worse.
All right, you're listening to The Green Majority here at CIUT 89.5 FM. It is September 9th. Wow. Today, live broadcasting in the studio. Just Stefan and I today. So while our tech is away, Stefan is in charge of music. Send all complaints to Stefan at greenmajority.ca. We're going to talk about three and a half things today. The half, I'll tell you first, is that as people probably know if they listen to the show ever, because we generally say it at least twice during the show, we have a bonus show after the show where we deal with some off-topic stuff or get to some stuff that we didn't have time for. Today's a little bit different because I have sort of a special piece of news / announcement / whatever. And if you're somebody who cares about this show at all, even sort of like even somebody who listens once in a while, this does concern sort of the future of the show. So I'm going to have to tease it like that. But even if you don't generally listen to the podcast, if you're usually a radio listener, but you appreciate hearing the show, I would ask it as Stefan and mine's request that even if it's just this once, you go to the website later after the show, some point during the next week or the following week, go to the website. You don't have to download anything. You can stream it right off the website, but and you just skip the little slider right to the end of the show and just listen to today's bonus show. That is our request today. So we'll leave that there. That's the half. The three is that I'm going to be getting to a slightly more comprehensive. We've sort of mentioned the NEB hearings in passing. Part of the reason was that there was a lot of other stuff going on. Part of the reason as well is that it was still very much a story in progress, and I didn't feel like, well, there's these little updates, like it was sort of super worth our time versus taking away from other stories to just do these tiny little updates. But I've sort of accrued a bunch of updates. So we have a last few weeks update on what's going on with the NDB. That's going to be in the middle section of the show. At the end of the show, we have a collection of world news in general that we'll be getting to that's going to be a little bit interesting. There may be some of that sprinkled throughout the show as well. But now, right this minute, Stefan is going to broadcast live from North Dakota. Stefan, you're in North Dakota. How are you doing?
Yes, exactly. I'm still in the studio. Now, if anyone wants to send me to North Dakota, please don't. I did actually want to – I would open the show that I get to say a sentence I never thought I would say on this show, which is that our top story is from North Dakota. Because you know it's as far as North Dakota goes, it doesn't get a lot of love from anywhere, and that's actually kind of interestingly that is also a part of this actual story. So of course this is the ongoing news story for the Dakota Access Pipeline, and when I was reading again, I was going through all the different news stories, and there's a ton out there right now. What I didn't want to do was sort of rehash all this sort of stuff, especially when you can go and actually hear some really, really good reporting done by Democracy Now! They have people on the ground. That's part of me. I think that they might be the only people on the ground there, actually sort of recording and talking about it. But what I want to do instead is sort of give us at least there's a bit of an update on what's going on, and then sort of talk more largely about what the difficulty of this story getting some news attention means to the greater movement. So just so for everyone knows, just so a couple quick updates. It's a $3.8 billion pipeline. So it's not a small pipeline. This thing is newsworthy from just the get-go.
Only if my memory serves, only maybe a few dozen or 100 kilometers, not a significant distance less than the Keystone XL. So that's why the last time we were covering it, we were talking about how this is basically Keystone 2.0.
Yeah, exactly. But of course, it doesn't cross the Canadian border. And they're building it in a way which is in segments to avoid a larger environmental review, basically. What I'm going to do is leave a couple reasons why this is newsworthy. So the first is just the money, $3.8 billion. It's over currently now blocking the gateway. Over 100 Native American tribes have congregated to block this pipeline. So this isn't just 100 people. This is 100 different tribes from across North America. And on September 3rd, as Democracy Now! Reported and actually has video of, these people were actually attacked by dogs and pepper sprayed by people using the company, by the company that's actually building this pipeline. Or I guess I should say the security of people who are, you know, quote-unquote, defending the pipeline. And then yesterday, the North Dakota governor activated the National Guard ahead of today's ruling. So sometime today, there's going to be a ruling on the injunction. On the Standing Rock Sioux tribes lawsuit against the government over this pipeline, and of course they're arguing that it's violating their historical land and their cultural sites, and that there are laws protecting that, and that this pipeline is not actually protecting that in any way, shape, or form. And so there are all of these pieces that make this story newsworthy. It's a huge pipeline. There are like people from all across North America galvanizing, coming towards it. There's of course the entire sort of like, which weird is like the climate piece of this is almost a side piece, but yeah, that's still obviously a massive conversation to be had about, you know, how much oil infrastructure do you need to build build for something that shouldn't exist in the next 50 years, or maybe 100 years, depending on how optimistic you are about our chances. And yet still, after all of these sort of different things, I'd be interested to know how many people actually have heard about it. I considered actually just polling random people in the office today, asking how many of them heard about it, but didn't have time before I got here. Because, you know, I can't help but think back actually to when the ranchers took over the federal building in Oregon. And that was the story on everything all over. It's not, this isn't to say that, you know, CNN hasn't covered it. I was able to find a couple of coverage of it, but it's not a lot. And it's nothing like the coverage that the ranchers who took over the federal building in Oregon did. And now you could argue, well, they had guns. Well, like, the only reason – is that better? Like, do you want the protesters to have guns? Is that what requires you to cover them? That seems very counterintuitive.
Well, I don't think anyone is I don't think this is intentional. It's sort of more of an analysis of the landscape of journalism. But I mean, if they did have guns, they would be the bad guys. And if they don't have guns, then we don't cover them. As opposed to being the good guys, right? Right. Like, so there's not, like, there's no, it's, it, you know, and at a terrible risk of, once again, going way off topic, but it's relevant. And I've been watching a lot of videos about this stuff, of course, the ongoing issue with unarmed black men or just black people, African Americans being shot by cops is like sort of one of those things. Like, well, what do you want them to do? Yeah. Right. If they obey, they get shot. If they don't obey, they get shot. And if they have a gun, shoot them. Like, what could they possibly do to defend themselves? Like, what you're asking, like, you know, part of the whole idea about a democracy, and this is actually quite specifically enshrined in the U.S., is the idea that it's to protect the minority against the whims of the majority, right? That's in a way, that's one of the things that a democracy does. And, you know, so people would say, well, you know, but then, you know, you could, you know, we can't do anything because someone will always complain. Yeah, okay, but what we're talking about is taking people's land and poisoning and destroying all the parts you didn't take. You know, so we're going to take half your stuff and we're going to break the other half. But, you know, don't do anything about it.
Yeah, well, exactly. And I think there's by the end of the ranchers, they were live streaming all of their thoughts on most major on some major networks. You know, there was this whole conversation going on about what they would do. And then they were actually like playing the people inside this like weird little space what they thought. And yet these people are at best getting a 1 minute segment on CNN where they talk to Jake Tapper and he asks a couple questions. They get to say their three sentences. And then it's still reported as things like, you know, protesters clash with government, or not with government, with the company, and that's how it's reported. And so the idea that, like, I guess it becomes more and more clear the type of people who have access to be able to tell their own stories versus the type of people who must sort of go on these shows and answer three questions and then be cut off and then have that segment edited however they feel like.
Well, sure. And another thing to point to thing out is in the extremely few times that anyone that there has been any coverage in the mainstream media about this issue, who do we hear from? We don't hear from a First Nations representative. We don't hear from somebody from one of these tribes. We don't hear in an interview or any of those stories about how they're being misused by police or how, you know, this is going to be poisoning, like basically destroying their futures. You hear from the oil company executive or some politician going, well, yeah, you know, it's an awkward situation, but we have to do this or blah, 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 blah. It's entirely one sided. And it's in. Let me say that it's extremely hard to believe that it's not intentional. So I can't claim that it is. I don't even necessarily think that it is. But it's ignorance and bias so earth shattering that you would be forgiven for thinking that it's a conspiracy to conceal, you know, the truth and both sides of this issue.
Yeah, well, I think what it comes down to some extent is privilege. You know, not privilege in a sense that's often being used, but in a sense that if I am the media. And I need to get something to talk about this in the next 35 minutes or an hour, whose phone numbers do I have? I have the politician's phone numbers. I probably don't have the number of the person who's actually there. All this to say is that go pay attention to Democracy Now's coverage on this. They've been covering it all week leading up to this week as it's becoming more and more of a flashpoint. It's amazing and should be listened to. But what I want to get to is I want to segue this into another story.
Ooh, let me do one more quick thing before you segue, sure. Which was just that I tweeted out before the show a pop quiz: how many solar panels does $3 billion by, and then in brackets said, reminding people that this is the Canadian taxpayer giveaway to these rich oil companies, which is going to be my theme for the next while, because I mean, we've had that number, but it's a recent number and it's a very big number. But I mean, we're talking about country expenditures, but so you know, like, well, $3 billion seems like an insane amount to me, but when you're talking about a country's finances, okay, well, that depends on the country and blah 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 blah, because the number of taxpayers, yada yada. But when we're talking about what else could this money be spent on, that is a theme we're going to be hammering, let's say, for the rest of this year. What could $3 billion buy?
Right.
A heck of a lot of solar panels. And, by the way, better jobs.
Yes, exactly. So to go from that, what I found interesting about this, the difficulty of getting this covered to some extent, is the difficulty of having, at least with current media saturation, the ability to have any sort of thing, to have a flashpoint of action around environmental issues at all. How do you garner enough support? And I had this really kind of ridiculous conversation recently with someone about whose death could be big enough to have like 100, 200, 300,000 people show up anymore. And you went through all the people, sort of, you know, like, you know, Michael Jackson would make sense, and then we're like, but it's interesting that we sort of still see ourselves as a sort of celebrity worship culture, but still the amount of saturation we get does not provide an ability for enough people to come together in almost any way, when you remove that sort of celebrity worship culture and just have what any action could actually get people to pay attention, what any sort of thing could actually get people to sort of start thinking about things differently or be a call to action for a larger piece. If it's not this sort of thing, if it's not a set of people standing together from all across North America blocking a pipeline, what is it? So the segue to that is, what would happen if all the United States went on strike and then throw in Canada? Because last week or earlier this week, there was a protest in India where 150 million people protested in India. 150 million people walked off the job. It's a one-day protest. They've been doing it for the last 4 years to protest the government. But I looked for coverage of this. 150 million people. That's literally all of the working people in the United States.
Yeah, no, I was going to say.
Plus all of the working people in Canada.
Is it pretty much all of the voting age? Well, not voting age. Let's say working age people in Canada and the U.S. combined.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's like it got one article on The Guardian that I found. There's one on Common Dreams that you sent me. There's a few. But this is it's a one-day protest, so it's not going to like – but it still cost – talk about $3 billion. It cost the Indian economy approximately $2 billion. Or yeah. $2 billion, I guess $2
million. Well, and it should also be noted as well, for the sake of context here, not to view that story through our own bias as privileged North Americans, because like, well, one day protest. Yeah, because like the vast, vast majority of people are protesting because they're deathly poor. So like they can't protest for a week, right? Their families will die. So the fact that they even took a day, like the number is shocking, but also the fact that so many of those people are incredibly desperate, and they're so desperate that they take a day off work for them. It means entirely different than you or I, or basically 99.09999% of anyone that might hear the show. Means something entirely different. I mean, that's the equivalent for many of these people of taking, like, you know, 3 weeks off, 2 months off, as far as the impact on their personal finances and their ability to live.
Well, what's interesting is that they're protesting for an improved daily minimum wage. This is a thing that, you know, and talk about sort of the power of protest, and sort of, I think now often we in the West, quote unquote West, have sort of see unions as passe, but only 4% of Indian workers belong to a union, and they're fighting for a daily minimum wage. That's not even a thing that exists here. That was a battle that was fought and won a while ago. And so the fact that there's this set of people who are coming together to fight for this, and the still the fact that it almost takes to understand the number of little small fights that are going on across the world, what is a full-time job. And we on the show cover some things, but we miss more than we cover easy. We have a 1-hour show. Democracy Now! Has a 1-hour show every day, and they do an excellent job covering what they can, but there's just so much all the time that to create this larger narrative or to understand actually what's happening everywhere, to create the ability for a galvanizing point to change the system that we live in, that, you know, that relies on oil and that feeds off this kind of daily labor, is – It can be overwhelming, and it's one of those things where it's like, I don't actually have an answer to this question, because it's one of those things where it's, you know, every day you come out. And I have a good story at the end of the show, so we'll go back to that at the end of the show. So I have one fun story for today, but it's still it's an interesting sort of power and overwhelming effort that was required to even get people's attention for anything. Let alone these sort of issues that are brought up by people who are already pushed down by the system we live in.
All right. I think that's a great place to take our first break. I have two quick shotgun comments, and then you can introduce our first music break.
Sure.
One of them was that I would like to give an extremely rare, possibly the first ever shout out to Facebook. Stefan, surprise. Stefan doesn't even know what I'm about to say.
I don't.
You're shocked and terrified. Twice yesterday, I was flipping through. I generally don't spend a lot of time on there, but it is occasionally, you know, a good extra source to skim for trending news. So I do tend to usually mostly on Thursdays sort of go through the Facebook and look at some stuff that's been flagged. And twice yesterday, I saw stories that caught my attention, but like it was like, oh, that's interesting. But partially because it was like that seems my skepticism, like Spidey sense, went boing. One of them was about NASA's EM drive, and the other one was about a World Bank, I think it was World Bank, or some, you know, large UN associated organization, saying, you know, how and when they think the world will end. And immediately following them, and they were both shared by you know, people that are in my friended on Facebook or whatnot. And immediately following them, they have this, and they've had this for a while, but I think they've recently updated their code because it's been doing a much better job recently. Because underneath both of them, it was other articles people have shared. And the first three things under both of them was like just absolutely elbow from the sky smackdowns of those articles. So, I mean, you know, shout out to Facebook. If in case this is not an anomaly and this is actually an update to their software to not necessarily intentionally seek out contrary arguments, but it seems to be producing this effect. That whether or not the original article or the shared article is good, the idea that it's trying, they appear to be making an effort to break this thing that they had, which was that they're only showing people things that agree with their positions.
Right, yeah.
They seem to be doing that by sticking to topics, but not necessarily sticking to all articles that agree on a single issue. And if that's what they're doing, then I would like to shout out to Facebook. If not, then you got lucky and I'm watching you.
Well, they're watching you too.
Yes, they are. And you know what? I forgot what my other thing was. So we'll come back to that later. Why don't you introduce our music break?
So our first music break is a song called Out of Town by a local Toronto band, Automanic. And if you want to check them out, they'll be on our website. So greenmajority.ca to see that.
And we are back. You're listening to The Green Majority here on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm your host, Derek Kaster, sitting in studio with my co-host, Stefan Hostetter. And we're going to... hold on. I almost forgot an important shout-out. Here on CIUT, live in Toronto, and on our wonderful and very appreciated community radio partners all the way across the country and international as well as all international listeners, our friends over at rabble.ca, which is another place you can check out our show. And while you're there, peruse some other good independent media as well. That's a good reason to check us out there. But If you enjoy the content and you just can't get enough, an hour a week is not enough. Green Majority is the place for you, because then you can get the bonus show, or you subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. That's how you get it. And as I mentioned earlier, today is not a regular bonus show. Today has some sort of like important announcement. So if you're even someone who even occasionally listens to the show, and enough that you've listened to it, say, more than twice, this will probably interest you. This is not just another news story, nor is it a clever ploy just to get you to listen to our bonus show. There is some important information if you're a fan of the show, so please tune in. You can do that by going to greenmajority.ca and streaming it off the website if you don't feel like downloading the podcast on iTunes. So we'll do that. So, Stefan, now yes. We're going to move on to the NEB.
All right, let's do it.
So I got a bit of a roundup there. I collected a number of stories here, and there was a couple of key pieces from them. So again, I'm going to list them on the website if you want to really get the full story on all of these stories. There's just going to be a shotgun, as usual, of all the stories that we referenced here on the show on the website. You can do that as well at greenmajority.ca, as I just said. But I want to highlight a few things, because not so much to sort of give a comprehensive history of what's been going on in the NEB. We're gonna do a lot of that. But also, there's just a few key things in each of these articles that I wanted to get to. So the first one was an article called "A Poke in the Ribs, Group Pitches Equalization Payments to Ottawa." So I should also say right from the outset that the National Observer is, I think, has like 4 of 5 of these articles. They've been doing amazing work. As usual, another huge shout out to National Observer and Mike D'Souza, who I think is the author of 3 of the 4 from them. So great job over there. Go check their work out. You can do that on the website or just go to them. So poke on the rep. So what this is about is that a rep from a president for a petroleum services group. I don't have the name in front of me because I cut pieces out of the article as reference and forgot to get that. But somebody who represents the oil industry basically in Canada was talking to the government, suggesting the idea that through the budget, the equalization payments be made dependent on provinces not blocking projects that would be in the, quote, economic interest of Canada. So basically, let the oil companies override the democracy of your province, or we're going to take all your money away. Now, even they said that they were, yeah, we're not particularly certain that this is going to go through, but they thought they'd float it anyway because, hey, Trump's almost winning. Trump could be the next American president. So maybe they're just thinking, ah, hell, let's just go for it. Who knows? There's obviously some funky magic in the air.
Yeah.
So that's shocking, but there's two things I wanted to get on this. One was that stuff like this does happen. These conversations happen all the time, and whether or not they get acted on, this is the mindset. This is the mindset of people who are advocating for this project. It is not at all because they actually think they have the right argument. It is because they've decided they have the right argument, and they will use any means necessary to shove it down your throat. Let us be clear. Number two is the simple idea that one of the quotes from Seckeld, who is the president of the Petroleum Services Group that I don't have the name of in front of me. So there's a quote that there will always be vocal minorities who will never be satisfied. That's a quote from him. And I think that's really, really dangerous, because there's two that, like, first of all, it's true, but it's also deceptively not true. And because what I mean by that is what he means by it. So on any issue, are you going to have contrarians, even on, I mean, as ghastly things as slavery? I mean, you can pick any issue and I can find you one person that will take the opposing view. So in a literal sense, he's right.
Yeah. Well, that's what the internet is for.
I'm sorry?
That's what the internet is for.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I cursed out somebody for being a libertarian the other day, and then I had to just close the window and walk away. So, but the thing is, what he's trying to is the both the mindset, because I think they really believe that, is that for them it's not about truth, it's about perspective, and this is a huge thing that again the people on the political right end of the spectrum are far more guilty of, not exclusively guilty of, but far more guilty of generally than people on the left, which is, this isn't about gray. This isn't about a conversation and coming to trying to come to the best solution that helps everybody. This is black and white. This is, I'm right, you're wrong, 100% of the time, always, and because you're not on my team, I hate you. They're applying, and no offense to Stefan here, they're applying a baseball or a sports mentality, which is that one of teams, as opposed to one of cooperation. And that on its face is disgusting. right? So that's a really big problem. And the idea that they're trying to push that, like, that's a way for them to try and just basically say, you know, never mind the counterarguments, because some people are never going to be happy. It's a way of trying to just, like, make people not look at what the actual arguments are by dismissing and minimizing them, which is what you get instead of actual arguments. Instead of trying to convince the Canadian people why this is good for them, they're like, well, it's obviously good because it's good. And so therefore, anyone that disagrees with me is an idiot. And some of them are just never going to be convinced. And that's why they disagree with me. And so just ignore them. Moving on. Energy East Pipeline panelist was penalized for insider trading. So Jacques Gauthier, one of the current National Energy Board members, was asked to recuse himself because of accusations of bias, was paid a $9,000 penalty after admitting that he did insider trading to sell shares in a wind energy company. So this is sort of related in the sense that, like, it's not direct, doesn't directly necessarily, this specific instance doesn't directly affect his judgment on pipelines per se. What it does do is just tell you a little bit about the ethics of the people who are making monumental decisions that will impact the future of Canadians for generations. Not particularly the most stand-up people, for starters, but it is relevant also just in the case that this is like the ninth thing that's happened. So another one was a gentleman, now his first name is escaping me, but Charest. Yeah, I don't have it in front of me. I'm sorry. But it's called the Charest affair, is all the headlines. But former Quebec Premier Jean Charest. So who is now, and this is the other thing I wanted to point out. Surprise, surprise, Stefan. He's a former politician. What do you think he does?
I'm going to guess he is paid to lobby.
He's paid to lobby for the oil industry. Ding, 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 ding. Once again, the revolving door of, we don't need to directly, you know, influence you and sponsor your campaign to have influence. We just need to promise you a really cushy job afterwards as a consultant to use all your connections. So that's the first problem, is that he even exists in his current state. The second thing is, of course, that they were holding secret meetings. These meetings are supposed to be public. From beginning to end, there's been corruption and just evidence that the people on this panel are not interested in what's best for the Canadian people. Their personal character is under great skepticism, I think, as far as their ability to make decisions independently of their own personal biases or for their own personal benefit. And it shows the absolute fact that even though this story is about, and it should be about, the absolute shocking bias at the National Energy Board, but also the fact that the story is always about the panelists, not the fact that this is modus operandi, standard operating procedure for any large corporation, particularly an oil company, to use every dirty trick and circumnavigate every possible rule and to completely ignore public laws, because at the end of the day, they get to do whatever they want. And the conversation we should be having here is that, are there going to be corrupt people in government jobs? All the time. Never. We're never, ever going to be able to do anything about that, because just a certain percentage of the population is just corrupt, like, just by their very nature. They have very low, you know, people. There's a spectrum of morality. We're always going to have people with very low morals. So that we can't eliminate that problem. The thing we can do something about is this giant free pass to completely wave the law in the air and do whatever the hell they want for major corporations, who we can smack down with the elbow from the sky. Never happens. No one would even dream of doing it. So we'll move on now. Where we are. Okay. First Nations don't trust federal pipeline consultation, says Grand Chief. Only three speakers show up. That's, again, the name of the article. And what we're looking at here was that they had 300 protesters showing up at a first panel. And the second panel, there was three. And one of the people that showed up, who did actually show up, was Grand Chief Stuart Phillip from the UC, a Union of BC Indian Chiefs, who told the basically empty room that, quote, we're not confident in the process. Should we appear to endorse a process that's fundamentally flawed, or do we... Do we do our speaking in the streets? And he added that this is a dilemma that indigenous communities face every day. And I want to pause on this one, and we'll get Stefan to jump in on this one here as well, which this is a really, really important point here. And this ties back to this is where my comment from earlier sort of was inspired by, was about the idea that, what do you want them to do? Right. So the purpose of every single indication that we've seen from the federal government, every single indication that we've seen from the National Energy Board, every single indication we've seen from the oil companies, is that these projects are going to go ahead because they've already decided. They've already decided, even without any of these reviews that they're promised they're going to do, they've already decided that this is what's best for Canada. Despite the fact that scientists, policymakers, insurance companies, we're going to get to that one in a minute. There's a new story about insurance companies sending out warnings about not investing in fossil fuels. Everybody has just decided that this is what's going to happen. So what happened when we went from Harper to Trudeau on the issue of climate change, and specifically, absolutely, on the case of oil, is one of, I'm going to do it differently because I'm going to convince you to go along with this as opposed to ram it down your throats. That's the change that we got. We did not get a change in mentality. We did not get a change in rethinking how we're going to run our country. We got a change in how the salesman that's coming to our door is going to approach us on this foregone conclusion that is, we are going to invest billions of dollars in an industry that's collapsing.
Well, and I think, yeah, what you've hit on is the central question of how to gain trust in a democracy, right? The reason why people don't vote is because they believe exactly what you just said, and the reason why people don't show up to the different hearings that are put on. You know, there are so many consultations going on all the time. And so many tribunals, like the Environmental Tribunal, sees so many things, and everyone can comment on them. And there's a whole terribly built website to let you go do it. And you can go into an empty room and talk to the three people who are you know, consulting with you. And you know, it's one of these things where it's until the government starts showing they're responding to requests, and every single MP will always tell you that they listen to everything you say, or every single MP will always say they write down all of the thoughts they hear in a consultation, and then they have that as part of their briefing notes later, and all of these different things. And I think I honestly do think, to give some slack, it is incredibly difficult to prove that you're listening to something, and there will always be some people who won't agree with you. However, at some point, you have to understand when a certain system is completely failing. And if the only people who know about the NEB, like there's probably like there's two people who know about the NEB. There are the oil industry, there's the oil industry itself, and then there are the activists who don't trust it. I would guess that the actual understanding around the NEB on an average person who does not follow any of these issues is almost zero, if not actually zero. And if you ask them what the National Energy Board does, I'm sure they would never guess that the largest thing that people talk about is whether or not they approve pipeline projects.
Stefan, it's almost as if you knew what I was about to say. The last piece from this story, another very, very important quote. I unfortunately clipped it without clipping the person that I quoted it from. I apologize. This is a quote by somebody in this article. You can check for yourself in the article. We'll post it. When I think of this Indigenous roundtable, I look around the room and I think where are all the First Nations people? Do they have internet? Were they invited? How do they know? These things are taken for granted if you have a computer. Not everybody has that privilege.
Yeah.
So that's another thing too, is just to think on that, is again, we're many people are thinking this through the bias of, well, they would just do that. Just take a day off work to go vote. Just take, you know, you could only protest for one day. Well, we had the post up on the internet. It reminds me of one of my favorite sci-fi classics of all time, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, when the Vogons, I won't go on for long if you don't know Hitchhiker's Guide, don't worry. The Vogons come and say, well, we're going to destroy your planet. And they're like, well, you can't do that. We're like, well, it's been up on the planning office on the backside of Mars for 10 years. It's not our fault you didn't read it.
Yeah.
So we're going to destroy your planet now. So anyone that's a nerd just loved that, and
yeah,
everybody
exactly.
else is scratching their heads or hates me.
No, but exactly. But that's the thing. And so I can tell you the person who said the quote is the Vancouver Mount Pleasant MLA Melanie Mark. But exactly. So that's the thing that I think, like, if you're the government and you want to, and I understand you have to have processes for everything. That's how you work through these things. However, I think when you get I'm sure the National Energy Board covers a bunch of other things that aren't some of these major processes. And if you're covering some of these major processes, you need to find a way to do consultation in a way that people will trust.
Yeah.
Whether or not – like there's always going to be a whole difficulty of doing this, and getting people interested in these things is impossible. As I said, if you go on – like you can go and comment on hundreds of applications to the Environmental Tribunal in Ontario right now. They're for weird things that you would never have guessed. There's small things, there's big projects, there's other projects. They all have to get posted. They all have to have a certain, like, 90 days for public consultation. And it's kind of – their website is terrible, but anyone can do that if you understand how to get there and if you understand it. And, like and all the – and to Melanie Mark's point, if you're able to – And so, you know, it's the government has to find a way to regain trust in themselves in general. But the way you do that in smaller part is through these types of things. Like if I trust the National Energy Board is hearing me and I can get my voice heard, and that might actually influence their reflections or their what they come down on, then suddenly I hear the government hearing me. Like that's the number one comment about the government is the government doesn't hear me, and so like with all of the bureaucracy we've built around so many pieces of it, a stronger process to actually make the citizens feel heard, and I think you're seeing that in some places, but again. Until that actually manifests in policy, you're not going to get anywhere.
Yeah.
As an aside, as a throwaway before we go to break, I think the one thing last year, it might have been 2 years ago, when the tampon tax was removed, in about a week. Like it was one of those things where like I'm sure it has a larger buildup, but it was one of those things that sort of like managed to hit the news cycle at the exact right time or something, and just basically you know there was a huge petition and it got passed and then it got passed, it got into the legislature, it got passed, and so like basically from a citizen idea to removing the tax on tampons felt at least like it was a 2 month process.
Well, and they accidentally showed their hand a little bit there because they showed just how easy it is to do something when they actually want to do it.
Well, yeah.
When there's no political downside for them against it, that would be great, but then I have to do this. Oh, but it might be hard. Yeah.
That's a weird example of showing people being heard, but like people said something and the government passed it incredibly quickly. Yeah. And the idea that you couldn't sort of, you know, and I understand that these large issues are way, 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 way bigger, way more complicated, but the sort of ability to feed back into the system or feel as a part of the system rather than a sort of, you know, a void to be yelled into to some extent, is incredibly important. And if you can't figure out a way to do that, you can't do it.
All right. Well, Stefan, you are right. It is time for break, but I had two more. I want to try and cram it into this section. We'll keep it. So we might go a minute over here, but I want to just finish up this section. So one of the other stories was that they had their first hearing on the credibility problem of the NEB. This, of course, was crashed by 300 protesters, which was described, the NEB described as a violent disruption. I'm sure someone ruffled their camembert that possibly was overly chilled. And it's now shut down. So we're now on an indefinite suspension of the hearings in Montreal. That was the most recent. And of course, what this led to, it had two more stories on that. There's some detail there, and they're using all sorts of things like, you know, saying, oh, these are violent tactics are used by protesters, blah, 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 blah. Okay, whatever. But the other two I want to get to really quickly. One was that was just the headline is all we need to say because I want to use my $3 billion reference point again. Was the province Alberta in this case estimates wildfire put $1 billion dent in the 2016 oil sands spending plans. Just want to remind people that's only a third of what we gave them for absolutely no reason this year. And the last one before we go to break here is that Enbridge suspends regulatory process for delayed Sandpiper pipeline project. This is a different project. This is the Sandline pipeline. Sandpiper pipeline.
Project. 10 times fast.
The Calgary-based company said their $2.6 billion – do you know where I'm going with this, Stefan? $2.6 billion Sandpiper project will be delayed until Bakken crude oil production recovers sufficiently to support its construction. Remember that point. That's important. It added, the new pipeline is not expected to be needed for more than 5 years. Those two sentences were written one after the other. I didn't take those at random. Yeah. I'm just going to leave it. I'm just going to walk away from that. Well, Stefan, would you kindly introduce our second and final music break?
For sure. So this was a...
All right, we are back. You're listening to The Green Majority here on CIET 89.5 FM, possibly on one of our wonderful and very appreciated radio syndicates all the way across the country and now internationally as well. You could be listening on rabble.ca, our friends over there, where it's a great place to find other progressive independent news and non-mainstream media information. As well, the best place, I have to say, no offense to anybody else, greenmajority.ca, because you get the bonus show.
Oh, yeah.
We have a special bonus show today because we're going to be talking about the future of the show a little bit. So again, I'll just mention a third time, because it's important. I really mean it. If you appreciate the show and you like what we do, in even just like slightly, You think we're like minorly amusing? I always consider us sort of the comedy after show to the Democracy Now, because we talk about a lot of the same stuff, but we tell a lot more jokes.
Yeah, that's true.
So we're like the light side of Democracy Now. Wow. I don't know if that works. Maybe, you know what I mean?
Maybe like light seems a little high, but
yeah. Lighter hearted. We sound like we're smiling when we say terrible things are happening.
Yeah, there we go.
It's more of a grimace, really, but you know, you can't hear that.
You smile through the pain.
So please, even if you heard the show, go to the website greenjury.ca, stream it. You don't have to download a thing. Stream it off the website, slide the slider right to the last like 15 minutes or so, and please I urge you, today's Stefan and Ayn's request is to just check it out, because we have some information we'd like to talk to you about the show itself and about the future of the show. So please do that. Without wasting any more time though, Stefan has decided, made an executive decision today, that we're doing only positive news in the final section.
Yes.
We had all good news and one thing flagged that's not good, so I'm just going to tell you about the thing that's not good and you can go and read it, and then we're not going to talk about it anymore. We may come back to it is an ongoing story. And I want to be clear that we're sort of being a little bit funny about it, but we always have to cut some stories. And I want to just acknowledge that even though we're being a bit silly about it, this is a very serious story. So please do go and read about it. We're just not going to get into it in the show today. And that was an ongoing saga of Grassy Narrows and some Health Canada records that are being withheld that possibly show methylmercury poisoning in a wide variety of people, doing some sampling that was done a while ago. And this information is being withheld, so there's some so a little bit of controversy about that. Go read the article on the website. But we're gonna spend the majority of the time talking about some good news, because we need a good news break, Stefan. I will let you take point. What do you want to start with?
All right, so we're gonna start with what. So I'm gonna call this. So it's definitely good news, but it's good news with the caveat. Again, I'm sorry. I demand all good news.
We're doing our best.
Exactly. So it's good news with the caveat that it's confusing good news. So there's a open cast coal mine in Northumberland. Which is the northeast England, that was approved by city council in July, but was recently just called back by the government due to climate concerns. And the reason why I say it's confusing is that despite the fact that UK has agreed to phase out coal in the Paris talks last year, and even as early this year, actually had some incredibly strong targets for 2030. Ever since the thing that we've somehow managed to forget about, which is Brexit, it's one of those things.
Well, because
like,
now they're on the Clexit.
Ah, there you go.
Doesn't quite roll off the tongue as well.
No. Brexit really did. Ever since the UK's decision to leave the EU, there was a large subset of concern that this would severely impact its climate targets, basically. And then it seemed as soon as the new Prime Minister was sworn in, Theresa May, she came in and scrapped Department of Energy and Climate Change, which is obviously not a great sign. And so it sort of seemed like everything was going in the same direction there. You know, everything was sort of moving away from the good news section. As much as I didn't ever think to say our top stories from North Dakota, I also didn't expect to say UK government takes climate change seriously anytime this year. But they have. So again, it has not in any way been completely scrapped yet. And one could argue that it is in part being pushed aside due to the fact that it also was going to like open cast mining is incredibly ugly. Like if you've ever seen open cast mining, it sort of looks like someone is scraping from the earth. You know, like there's some types of really damaging things in the environment that look as damaging as they are. Open cast mining is one of them. And it was going to be right on the ocean water, and it was a bad place. But it was apparently it was called back due to climate change concerns. And the news has been praised by the co-leader of the Green Party, even so politicians there who would have it out for the people doing this have actually praised it.
Have every incentive to take the hardest possible.
Exactly.
View, yes.
Yeah. Have out and said it's significant and very welcome. Coal is dead, everyone. like coal. If I can be coal's Nietzsche, coal is dead. And the sooner we realize that, the better. And this is just one more example. Part of me wants to do. Speaking of just things I'd like to do with the show, I feel like a year in review show where you just go through all of like the coal is dead stories from this year would be a fun thing to do.
We won't because I appreciate our audience too much to do this to them. But we could do an entire show called Things Bjorn Lomborg was wrong about. One of them is that we won't stop doing coal or oil until we're out of coal or oil. busted. Right. And the funny and the interesting thing, though, is that this also provides a very uncomfortable argument for the oil industry, because we're not out of coal. Coal is still is now being surpassed by renewables, I might add. But that's very much dependent on the time and place. It depends where you are in the world. There's, you know, that's not universally true, but we're getting there. And it is true in some places. But we are getting off of coal before we're out of coal. Or at least we're heading in that direction. Of course, I realize there's a number of caveats there. But if we can do it for coal, then we can do it for oil.
Right.
Right. So the idea, well, it's too much money to be made off it. Well, that you, we've already proven that's not true. So stop saying that it isn't true.
Yeah, so that's the whole story. The whole story is that they've pulled it back. They have not fully canceled it yet. Of course, that's an ongoing story. Hopefully, we'll get more good news on the story later, or it will revert to the mean and get to be depressed again. But this is only good news of the 15 minutes of good news in the Green Majority. So, Darren, what is the next good news story?
Well, it turns out that Costa Rica has been running entirely on renewable energy for months. Once again, I apologize to our audience, but this good news comes with a minor caveat.
Yeah. Good news with caveats. The Green Majority.
That's really the best we can do here, folks. Without lying to you,
and, we're trying.
You know, there's no money in extremely liberal radio to the extent that Rush Limbaugh is. So you know, we're not going to lie to you because you know we think our audience knows better. So. So it's interesting. So they've been running 76 straight days off all renewables, demonstrating that it is possible. And the reason, and now the immediate counter argument there would be, okay, well, it's Costa Rica. They're in a particular climate. They have certain advantages, you know, because of their place in the world, they have better access to solar. So it's not a fair to say because Costa Rica we can do it, Canada can do it. Yes, it is true that that does not follow. However, it also doesn't mean it's not true. We've demonstrated because a big part of the thing about reason people were saying it was not about the ability to generate the energy. It was also just about the concern about a system running on this. Like, well, if it's all renewable, there's a problem. We can do it. Now, here's the other caveat. So that one's not a real caveat. There's sort of that's a false argument you might make against it because yes, it doesn't prove that anybody can do it, but it doesn't disprove it. It provides evidence that it is possible to do it. It doesn't sort of put the nail in the coffin, but we're heading in the right direction. The other caveat, the more legitimate caveat, is the fact that a huge part on this, my assumption was, oh, well, they've just built a billion solar panels. No problem. It's Costa Rica. Actually, that's not true. It's mostly hydropower, and there is concern around hydropower. The impact, we won't get deep into the science today. I'll just say it, and you can believe me or not, is that there is some methane release, unfortunately, associated with that as well. So it's not climate change neutral, and it's not all solar panels, you know, hydropower being probably the most asterisked of the renewable energies. But right direction, I'll take it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And there's, you know, it's Costa Rica, man. I feel like if like the aliens came to Earth afterward and saw things like, you know, that Costa Rica country, that they figured it out. The rest of the world didn't really. But like Costa Rica is also the same place that had to choose between universal healthcare or a military and chose healthcare. Yeah. Like there's something in the water in Costa Rica that makes them do like remarkably smart things. And apparently also energy.
Yeah, I also tend to read or anything about Costa Rica because I've never seen anything short of a stunningly beautiful picture of Costa Rica.
Oh, yeah, exactly. It must be
that
really...
might be their tourism department at work, but who knows?
Oh, kudos to that.
So another one here we've got is I'm going to call this good news, which is, again, we teased it earlier, which was several insurance, multinational insurance companies representing about $1.2 trillion, that's trillion with a T, Stefan, in assets declare subsidies for coal, oil, and gas. Nobody's surprised about coal, but oil and gas. That's liquid natural gas, BC, we're looking at you. As well as coal, as well as oil, are simply unsustainable. Multinational insurance companies, not known for their bleeding hearts as corporations, and not really used to associating them with making political statements of any kind. So I think it's been predicted, and we've talked about for years, about how the insurance industries are going to be one of the first major multinational powerful industries to really get on board, because they're one of the first people to lose insane amounts of money due to climate change. That prediction has now come true, and they've actually, this is not the first time that there's been a story about it. It's been smaller companies, and it's been smaller stories about how, you know, they're cautioning their clients, and they're trying to start to hedge their bets, and they're adjusting. We've done numerous stories about how they're starting to adjust their policies to try and prevent losing money, which also means that people are now not being insured against disasters that are coming, because, like, we know they're going to come, so we're not going to insure them, not going to insure you at the same rate, or we're going to charge you more. But now it's getting a little bit more fevered pitch, where they're not just sort of adjusting their business model. They're now saying, like, hey, guys, like, seriously, like, you cut it out. This is insane. These are some serious folks who are not doing this for political reasons. I doubt any of them have science degrees. This is pure business saying this other business is not working. And I have a tendency to believe the insurance industry over the oil industry about climate change. If I had to take one of their opinions and I had access to no other information, Occam's razor would tell you that one of them is more likely to be true than the other.
Well, one of them is the one paying for it to some extent. And it's interesting. It's a funny thing in that we don't really understand, or it's not often understood, how much impact this kind of insurance can have on a wide different range of stories. I'm just going to tease this story because I had a brief conversation with someone about it before, but it's insurance related, and it's good news, which is that in the States, some insurance companies are now getting in to actually insure the amount of money a solar panel will make when it is put up, which allows the person who's installing it to actually get better rates on the loan to actually implement it. So it's an insurance company that's coming in and actually basically being like, yes, we've seen enough of this organization, we've seen enough of solar panels at this point in time, and so at that certain point, we're looking at, you know, we know how much money we're going to get back, so we can ensure that you'll get roughly this money back, which means that when the person who wants to build a solar panel goes out and gets a loan, they actually can be, look, I'm insured. You'll get your money back. Making that, like, if you're the all of that is to say that the options for a solar boom or increased solar exponentially throughout North America and the world really is increasing as it becomes, like any industry, as business gets more and more used to it, it becomes easier and easier to do, and then more and more things become interesting and possible. And this is another example of, like, you know, everyone sort of said that the solar industry was young, and, like, unless you paid attention to business, you don't really know what that means. And this is an example of it sort of growing up to some extent, is that insurance companies now can understand it well enough to actually start insuring how much profit you can get from a solar panel.
Yeah. All right. So we're down to about 2 minutes, and so I'm just going to read the title of the last article I wanted to get to, because I think it will convey with a hint of sarcasm in my voice everything that I would have said. I think I can communicate with a tone. So, Obama to focus on climate change after he leaves office. That's all I'm going to say about it. Yeah. read the article. It's funny. But the last thing I want to say is that, you know, we have this thing about, passive houses are now possible. They're now getting easier and easier to build. Passive house means that it doesn't take it. In some cases, it actually means entirely resource neutral once it's been constructed. And so there's depends whose definition of passive house you're using. But these are houses that don't exist as far as the energy grid is concerned. And so, I mean, when we're going about, well, we need all this power, we need to build all these power plants, we need all these nuclear plants, we need to keep burning coal, or any of these other arguments, we can build these houses. They're like, well, yes, but they're expensive and people can't afford to build them. Okay, well, how about instead of spending billions of dollars on pipelines, maybe, I don't know, say just random, pick a number out of my head, say about $3 billion a year, you could help subsidize all these passive houses, and then you wouldn't need very much energy because all the new houses in Canada would be passive. You could pass new laws to make all the buildings passive. This is a problem with 45 solutions, and you're picking the only wrong answer. Please stay tuned for the bonus show. Important announcement. You're going to love it or hate it, but either way, you should listen. That's it for the Green Majority this week. Thank you very much to Steph and my co-host, and for you for listening. Take care, good, and have a good Green Week.